Hello and welcome to Glimmer of Genius, episode 23. This is a podcast all about Magic the Gathering, bringing you the latest happenings in the MTG community, from news to tournament reports, deck ideas to MTG finance. We are Glimmer of Genius. If you want to learn more about the show, then check us out on Facebook at Glimmer of Genius, leave a comment or a question for the show, and become part of the conversation. My name's Luke Vincent, and I make YouTube videos. On the line with me is Level 2 Judge Grant David. It's getting warmer, Grant. I don't like it.
Well, you've seen the colour of my hair.
In today's episode, Grant has another spicy brew for us, and we're going to talk about GP Hartford, I believe it was. Says.
Oh.
Yeah, Hartford. It didn't sound right. It sounded like that's... Where is Hartford?
I actually don't know, but it does sound like it's somewhere in the Midlands.
That was basically why I faltered there, because I thought, I'm pretty sure...
It's in Connecticut.
Okay, I'm sure that's...
It's the capital of Connecticut, man.
Ah, I'm sure that's exactly like the Midlands. But anyway, apart from me not knowing where Hartford is, Grant, what have you been up to this week in the world of Magic?
I haven't really been up to too much. I think if people remember last time I said that I was mostly focusing on sort of casual stuff like Commander or Cube or whatever. And I finally finished making my 700 whatever it is cards Cube for using that Star Wars custom thing. So that's all finished now.
Nice.
Hopefully aiming to play at a dice soon whenever Simon / Jim finds the time in the next couple of weeks and give that a go. It should be great if people want to join that because, anything more than four people is good.
Yeah.
Anything less than that, like last time it was a bit awkward. I was like, well, I'm just going to sit here and not play cards.
If you advertise it well enough, people will come because it's so unique.
Yeah, hopefully anyway. But yeah, so that's what I've mostly been doing. I also played my cousin who sort of got into it like a couple of months ago. And it's in a really weird sort of state in terms of, I know exactly like where he's coming from, but it's kind of weird how for me to address it, because of course he's just got into it, got like a few starter decks, but also picked up those other random cards. So he's got like mostly standard cards, but also got like random like things like Desecrated Demons and like Dark Rituals and stuff.
Oh, right.
So most of the time it's kind of like, I'll just use my standard deck because it's like consistent and it's competitive. So most of the time, you know, I'll probably beat it. But then suddenly it would be like turn two, Desecration Demon. I was like, well, I used to play that standard for a couple of years. So yeah, so mostly what we've been doing is I've been training like different formats and stuff. So we've been talking about modern and like how expensive it is to get into that. But obviously the benefit of keeping the cards. I was lending a commander deck and had a game of commander, which I think he quite enjoyed. And I said, you know, for someone that's just getting into it, and it's obviously the most recent cards I've got are like, you know, Cavendish Ombuds kind of thing. I said, you might as well give that brawl thing a go, particularly now that he lives in Brighton and can go to Dice Loot. Apparently, you know, there's a few games just kicking off whenever.
Yeah. When you teach people Magic, how do you approach the stack?
He obviously learned how to play, and that was fine. And like when we actually got to play, the only mistakes he was kind of making was like, you know, tapping while blocking and that kind of nonsense. The stack, I think he seems to understand. I mean, it's not too much of an issue because he's playing like green and black. Obviously, blue would be a bit more of an issue. But I think I explained to him how counter spells work. He didn't really know how that worked and, you know, didn't know they got around stuff like Hexproof or whatever. I think it's quite straightforward. The thing he was kind of not struggling with, but the thing that I think he's going to struggle to get into practice of is, you know, the whole thing you learn very gradually of in Magic, it's always best to do things at the last possible moment.
Yeah.
And I said to him, like, you know, say if you've got like a spell that gives like plus, you know, you don't want to go do it and then attack because then they can just block what's beneficial. You want to wait until the last moment, either get more damage through or do a, you know, beneficial trade.
Yeah.
And so, let me think about that kind of thing. So I think the stack isn't too bad, particularly because he's not really playing decks that do that. It's mostly the kind of, just like the basic strategy kind of stuff of it, really, like blocking in certain ways or not attacking in certain ways or obviously using instants at the last possible moment. So I think that's the bit I'm trying to get into to understand, because I think, to be fair, that's probably going to make the biggest difference in terms of playing well, I would say.
No, that's fair. I remember overhearing some people being taught how to play Magic, and someone was saying, oh, I'm going to do this, and the person sort of teaching was saying, you can, but you might want to wait to do that. And he was like,
yeah,
but I can do this now, right? And he was like, yes. He's like, okay, cool. So I'm just going to do it now. And it was like, it's amusing. It's that the strategy or the nuances of the game as you kind of learn you don't need to do stuff immediately. I have one more question about it. At any point, has he tapped his creatures to block?
Yes.
Yeah, I think...
yeah, as I said, like, that's one of the sort of few mistakes I picked up on. Yeah. But now you don't do that.
Oh, that always made me laugh. I'm pretty sure I did that as well. But I think that's one of the things that I see the most when people learn the game. They just instinctively tap. It's like,
I don't think I ever did, but I think that's because it was never a thing we saw in our playgroup, and even though we didn't know the rules very well, it's just something that we never did, I think.
Yeah, good teachers then.
Yeah, well, sort of.
Right, let's hear your brew then, Grant. Let's hear what you got. What have you got for us? Is it standard? Is it modern? What is it?
This is all of them are modern, just because you get more cards. It's just hilarious. But So, I haven't told you about the Rainbow Flayer deck, have I?
Rainbow Flayer.
Okay, I'll put the link in. It was an MTG Goldfish deck that someone told me about. I was just like, this is, I need to build this straight away. I obviously don't think it's going to be very good, but it's hilarious. So it goes around the card, you remember from Fate Reforged, what's it called? There's something Flayer. Soul Flayer, that's it.
No, I don't remember that one.
So it is double black and four colourless for Del. So it's a 4/4, but then every creature you exile from your graveyard for the delve cost, it gets those evergreen text. So if you exile something, it gets blocked. And the same is, obviously the list does matter because something's different. The same is true for first strike, double strike, death touch, haste, hexproof, indestructible, lifelink, reach, travel, and vigilance.
Okay.
So what you do is you have a deck of obviously four of those. It's technically five colours, but you don't obviously like cast most of the cards. You have stuff like, it's got Sylvan Carotid in it, because then it gives it Hexproof if you exile it. It's got stuff like, more recently, obviously, Zatalpa, the white primal dragon, primal dinosaur, because then it gets flying, double strike, just travel indestructible. You've got Vampire Nighthawk, because it picks up, obviously, flying, get punched with the knife link. It's got Saggy Baller from Khans, trample and Hexproof, that kind of thing. Oh, and Mantis Rider as well.
Mantis Rider.
And then basically what you do is you use stuff like, what we got, so Cathartic Union, Faceless Looting, and Grizzly Salvage mostly. So what you do is, that's fine, isn't it?
Grizzly Salvage.
So Grizzly Salvage, if you don't remember from Research of Ravnica, so green and black, real top five cards of your library, you put a creature or land card among them into your hand, the rest in your graveyard. It's just one of my favourite Golgari, useful, but also put the stuff in the bin.
Didn't that see play in standard?
I think it did, yeah, at the time. Mostly because of Deathrite Shaman.
Yeah.
Which obviously was stunned. But yeah, so basically you've got about 25 creatures in it. Again, people can look at my version of the deck, but the proper ones underneath. And you just get rid of the stuff you don't need, get a Soul Flayer, then exile the stuff, hopefully get a creature effect group so that it at least stays around for a while, and then just have crazy text and stuff. Oh, Lightning Axe is quite useful as well. You've got removal, and also you can just go like discard this Elder Dragon, exile it, so Soul Flayer. And the thing is as well, because I remember a friend of mine who was playing Standard at the time, he tried to make a deck around this in Standard. And it was nice, but the thing is it was too difficult to get so many cards in the bin.
Yeah.
The thing is, although this is obviously technically a 6-mana card, I think actually, because realistically you're going to be playing double black for it, I think actually it's quite, it's not too slow for modern.
No.
So I do want to give this deck a go, because I think there are situations where, say if you're playing like Burn or something, where you just do, you know, you get to turn three or whatever, and then you get a Soul Flayer that's got something like, I don't know, haste, hexproof, and life, and just you've got this 4/4 that keeps it, you know, it's going to be quite powerful, I think. So I don't know how it's going to actually play out, but it's very, very funny, I think.
I think it's quite amusing. It's interesting as well, like the creatures can actually just be played if you get to like a late game stage, but you can just play creatures. It's quite amusing.
It has Stinkweed Imp in it as well, which unfortunately doesn't have Death Touch. It has the thing that's very much like Death Touch, but not quite. They're obviously the Dredge, because Dredge 5, because it's just, you know, good.
Yeah.
Also, the only other card it has four copies of besides the Soul Flayer and the Silver Carotid is Drogskull Reaver, which is a 7-mana spirit from Dark Ascension. It's a 3/5 flying Double Strike and Lifelink.
Oh, right,
It just gives it, like, the best text upon Hexproof.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you say you go Silver Carotid turn two, you've done like a Christie, haven't you? But you get to turn three or turn four, all you need to do is exile something with Hexproof and that, and you just basically, you know, what, effectively, particularly like I said, against something like Burn or something like some other really quick deck or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know how they'd answer that at all.
Yeah, just like eight every turn, gain eight, like, a whole lot. yeah, it's a bit crazy. Also, one that I quite liked, which again, I've kind of done a few one-offs if people are looking at this, just to sort of testing. There's a random card from Planar Chaos called Uktabi Drake, which is a one green mana, 2/1 flying haste creature. But you have to pay 3 for its echo cost to keep it alive. So the way I see it is you just play it, you attack for 2, and then it kills itself, puts it in the bin, and then obviously you can give the Soul Flayer flying haste, which I think is quite a good evergreen text to get.
I take it doesn't inherit echo.
No, it's only evergreen text.
Okay.
Well, the evergreen text that is states, not all of it.
Oh, okay, cool.
Because otherwise stuff like, well, not that it'd be that useful, but like Street Wraith would be, I guess, okay, because you can cycle it in for Swamp Walk or whatever, but it's only the ones it lists. Same as Audric, I think, did the same sort of thing, where it gives you like lists and just say all every text can go to it, otherwise.
Yeah. You don't want to give things banding.
No, exactly. So, so it also runs on Burial Rites, which I think is quite nice.
You
salvage and you can bring back one of the bigger cards, like Droskal Reaver, because Droskal Reaver, as well as being that 3/5 flying double track lifelink, it also has the ability, which is whenever you get a life draw a card. So obviously you attack with it, you can normally be drawing 2 cards. So that's quite a nice sort of touch. It also runs Sphinx of the Still Wind, if you remember that guy.
Oh yeah.
Flying first track vision lifelink and then pro red and green, obviously you don't inherit that. But then if you Unburial Rites against Unburial Rites him, that's quite nice.
Yeah.
It's not bad. Not really much else to talk about. It's got a bit of a weird land base, and I think you probably could be, if you wanted to, I think you could probably go like just green and black, just green, black, red for pages losing and stuff. But yeah, I think it does technically splash like a bit of white and a bit of blue just in case you want to cast stuff.
It makes sense, because I mean,
like, it has one Watery Grave for blue, a Sacred Foundry and Temple Garden for red, for white, and then the rest of it's red, green, black, so it seems alright.
And is Xenagos in there just for the indestructible?
I believe so. Yeah, the original one. I think I took him out of my version. I didn't really like him. But I think he was just in there for the instructors. Elish Norn, it's fun if you do the Unburial Rites thing. I don't think I put that in. But yeah, 3 Xenagos just for the instructor. I don't think I really like that. Yeah, my one had more crazy obscure stuff, like Vampire Nighthawk and that weird Echo Drake I told you about. That one's a Talpa, yeah. But I don't think the Talpa was out when this came out. No, 2017, yeah, so. To tell people was not an option, but now that's probably something you might want 3 or 4 of. It's like a lot of text to give someone.
I think I would. I don't know if you. It's hard because it almost feels pointless playing the blue, but then I suppose you don't need to worry too much. Like if you get the Sylvan Charioteer, then great. If you don't, then who cares?
Yeah, I mean you got 4 of them again, mostly for Hexproof, but also for Ramp. It's one of my favorite cards anyway. So
yeah. I like. Because outside of Mantis Rider, you're not casting any of those blue cards, really.
No. I've also run, so Droskal Reaver we talked about, that's the blue-white one. But I've also run Beltal Dragon, which is a flying Hexproof creature, and Sacred Mauler, which is a trample Hexproof creature. But again, you can morph those if you want to. You know, if you want to just have a creature, so it's fine.
Yes. Sacred Mauler.
I mean, I'll talk about it maybe next time. But I also built a deck that revolved around cheating cards into play. You morph Savvy Mauler for 3, and then you flicker it with like Cloud Shift or something. And if you don't know, if you exile a morph creature and it comes back, it comes back face up.
Okay, I didn't realise that. That's cool.
Yeah, so you go, well, the best play you could do is, there was that enchantment from Fate Reforged or whatever it was, which was morph costs 1 less. So you go, turn what only costs green. Green enchantment, then you morph Savage Mauler for 2, and then you cloud shift it next turn, and you just get a 6-6 trample hexproof, which is quite fun.
No, that's pretty sweet.
Or you could do a chroma, you know, the red chroma.
Oh, yeah.
So, just not like that. It's quite fun.
That's pretty cool. Would you consider, it's slightly different vein, because, I mean, it's a bit of a non-bow, but would you consider Cairn Wanderer? There's a bit of extra redundancy.
I see. I did think about it. I think it's on my maybe list.
For those that don't know what Cairn Wanderer is, it's kind of like Soul Flayer, but it doesn't require you to delve. You just get the text.
The thing that puts me off is that it's 5 mana.
Oh, right, okay. I thought it was 4.
If it was 4 mana, I think I would do it. And it's got a slightly different list of texts, so it would pick up. It picks up Protection and Shroud and Fear, which Soul Flayer doesn't. So that's interesting.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's possible. it's a nice idea. I think just like you can't do it for two, five is quite a steep one. It depends. If you put more ramp in it, maybe. So if you found some more defenders or mana creatures with text on them, I think you could probably do it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, five is a lot for modern, unless you are winning the game on the spot. Like, you need to be doing something pretty powerful.
But you can also run White Chroma. Gives you flying, first run, business, travel, haste. You can run one of the angels, which has got flying, vigilance, haste. You can run Ketra, so that's double strike, indestructible.
Mm.
You can run Samut, that's double strike, vigilance, haste. You know, there's stuff with text on them.
Yeah.
I mean, my gatherer, so I found a deck, and I was like, I'm sure that's why there's better creatures than this. I just did a gatherer search, just did like, not haste, because it sucks so many of them, but like all the big ones, like double strike and hexproof. I just did a search for like any creature in Modern with that, and I just narrowed it down to this sort of list, really.
Yeah. I think double strike and evasion is probably where you want to be, isn't it?
Yeah. I think the hexproof is so necessary.
Yeah.
Because you've got four simple characters, it shouldn't be a problem. But I also have, like I said, the Saggy Maw and the Beltable Dragon, just to make sure it does stay alive. But then, to be fair, there seems to be, well, we can talk about it in a bit with GP, there seems to be more people playing Lightning Bolt and less people playing Path of Exile, I think. Now that red's a bit more popular than, like, I don't know, white, it seems. I don't know.
Okay.
But basically what I'm saying is having four toughness is actually more significant than it was before, where I was just like, oh, I need extra blood, I'm just going to get Path.
Well, it's even better if it can dodge the bolts, so that's good.
Yeah, you know, for me, that used to be my criteria for, like, can I play this card in Modern? But now that it's not as common anymore, it's quite nice that you can have to go, like, yeah, it's got the three toughness, it's fine.
Mm. So we'll move on to on the GP. GP Hartford.
Yeah, it's interesting because you see, I don't know, decks like Elves and stuff, it's something that is always about. I mean, if you go to a tournament or go to a site of a GP, it's always something that can happen. But I can't remember Elves making top 8 for a big tournament for quite a while now.
No, the last time I remember seeing Elves on top 8 of something big was when LSV was playing it, and that was, I think, extended.
So that's
how long ago that was. I'll put a link to the top 8 in the show notes, but it is as stock as you can get.
Yeah.
It's got all of the elves you would expect to see, lands being the exception. It's four of everything except Azuri, the legendary creature. So, yeah. I mean, it's pretty simple. Play elves, turn them sideways, profit. Four Shaman of the Pack, which is interesting.
I like that. I always like Shaman of the Pack, to be fair.
Yeah.
So I agree with that difference.
It makes sense to me. You want to make elves, and sometimes you don't have a turn to kill them.
Yeah.
Whereas this guy solves that. So, okay,
yeah, exactly, yeah.
I've made elves, or people are going, right, good for you with all your elves. I've got a blocker with lifelink. It's like, okay, I've got this shaman laser, and then that's it. It's great. Yeah. Makes sense to me. I like seeing in the top 8 because it makes you feel good about modern, even though it's a pretty messed up format anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, it's nice.
It's nice to see that a deck like this actually do well at an event. Speaking of things I haven't seen for a while, maybe they have been around a bit, but I can't remember a recent memory. Boggle's doing that well.
Not top 8 again. It's something you always see at a tournament that tends to get shut down by stuff. And this is what I was saying before. It's like, I went into detail about last time. It's like game theory in terms of if lots of people play Boggles, people will sideboard against it. But if no one does and everyone's scared of Tron and, you know, Jason Whitecock or whatever, everyone forgets to put in the anti-boggle stuff. And now that this top 8 has two boggle decks in it, I reckon what will happen is more people cycle against it, and therefore we won't see it in the next one at all.
No,
so it's really interesting about that.
I completely agree. And Affinity being another example, I haven't seen Affinity for a little while, and here it is in the top 8.
Yeah.
So it's like one Elf's deck, two Boggles, one Affinity, Amulet Titan, and
been out for a while.
Yeah.
Also, because obviously it suffered after Summer Bloom getting banned. Did it used to run Sakura Tribe Scout? Because I don't remember that, and that's a really interesting card that I remember seeing when I was playing in Kamigawa, but I don't think I saw it before.
I have seen deck lists with it in, and I'm not sure if it ran like four of them.
This one did, so I guess that's replacing Summer Bloom then, just to replace it back.
I guess it does combo nicely with the
Amulet of Vigor.
Amulet of Vigor and the lands. It's what that deck wants to be doing, isn't it? abusing the lands and coming in and all that. So yeah, it's pretty sweet. One main deck engineered explosives. That's pretty cool.
I like it. It's got Rurik Thal in the sideboard.
Rurik Thal, which one's that?
Whenever a player casts a non-creature spell, it does 6 damage to that player.
Oh, wow.
It's just anti-storm, but like so anti-storm. It's ridiculous.
The affinity list is also pretty stock, except for, and I say except for because hesitantly, because like the Glintness Crane, for example, is not something I would necessarily say is stock, but you do see lists with it. It's probably one of the cards that gets, yeah, kind of like that blue enchantment that's a pair of scissors, I can't remember what it's called, in Soul Artifact. That kind of sometimes appears in lists, a bit like Glintness Crane does. I do like, what is it in the sideboard of this affinity deck? I do like Ceremonious Rejection. I think that's an interesting,
very useful at the moment, I think.
Yeah.
There was no Tron at all in the top 8, was there?
No Tron.
Nine works combo, which is a deck I want to play, but I just don't think I have the brain for it. And I think that every game would just be exhausting if you did win.
Yeah, I remember someone wanted to playtest that against me online, and after like literally one game, I was like, I'm done with this.
Online, I can imagine just being so stupid if you can't shortcut stuff.
No. If you haven't heard of, what's it called? Carrot Clan? Yeah, I can't even speak.
Crack Clan Ironworks.
Yeah. You basically sacrifice artifacts, make mana. And then
two mana
and keep doing this until you can slowly kill them with the Pyrite spell bomb. You basically go off with all your artifacts and yeah, well done you. Stony Silence is good against this deck.
Yes, I entirely agree.
And then Hollow One. And I saw some people on Twitter, I can't remember who they were now, pro players, turn one, two Hollow Ones. Someone had like took a picture of a match being played.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and just sort of saying like how degenerate this format is.
It's really not like, if you're playing stuff that like discards stuff in your hand at random, like you really can't be angry at them.
No.
But it's kind of what I want to play the next one. Like, one, because it is quite good, and two, just because I like that, how random it is, because you can just, you know, if you go off, you just say like, sorry, like the RNG gods are in my favour, and from experience from playing, you know, stuff like Warhammer, I always seem to have a knack for, if I play consistently and like competitively, I do really badly, but if I go something really risky, I do quite well. Like, for those of you that this means anything to, I once had like a single tower fire warrior like surviving combat against a 200 brood lord or whatever it is. Like, I think he rolled just 4-1, so this tower fire warrior, like, yes, I survived!
Awesome. Yeah, it seems like a fun deck, this Hollow One deck.
Yeah, I agree.
I know it's nothing new necessarily, but I just think if you're going to play modern, you have to accept that you will lose on turn one sometimes.
Yep.
And sometimes that'll be a deck like Lantern Control, except you won't realize you've lost and you'll have to play through anyway.
One of my proudest moments ever, which I'm sure I've told you about, was me beating Lantern Control, because I was playing my ally deck, which had that 0/1, and I attacked for 0 because, you know, Inkstone Bridge doesn't care about 0 power breaches, and then Aetherviled into play a creature, gave it +2 power. And
nice.
Yeah, I'm proud of that.
That is a good moment.
Yeah. I don't know what else is unusual in this. Well, like we said, there's no Tron, there's no, what else is big? Well, there's no Bloodbraid Elf or Jason Mindsculptor at all, is there?
Nope. No Bloodbraid Elf, no Jason the Mindsculptor. The Burn deck that's in the top 8 as well is, again, very...
So snog.
Yeah. I think I have almost that exact 75.
He stole your list.
Yeah. One stomping ground for the Destructive Revelry. Ben will be pleased.
I was just wondering what that was for, because sometimes they run a Tarkus Command, don't they? So.
Yeah, Ben is like really big on Destructive Revelry. He will have it any other way. That, like, you know, if that's what you want from your sideboard, then that's the card that you need to do that thing. And he's very hot on that, and it seems to be proving him right. Yeah.
Oh, is the price of Goblin lore still like crazy? I think it even went up even more. I think it was at like $13.
It's not a rare, is it? It's an uncommon.
Yeah, no, I know. From 10. Yeah, oh, for God's sake. Okay, so it was like 20 cents. I mean, it went up to 13, which I remember. Then it stayed at 13 for a bit. Then it went up to 25, and now it's at 28.
Goblin lore.
Yes.
$28.
If people have 10 position or portal, you look through your uncommons.
The actual.
Yeah. The thing is, though, which I didn't. I mean, obviously there is probably a reason for this. I don't see why you don't run Cathartic Reunion rather than Goblin Lore, because you're not doing it at random.
That's too mad, isn't it?
You discard less cards, but as long as you've got one mana, I think it's just strictly better.
I would tend to agree with you. Obviously, he must
have
done.
You can't do turn two, play all of them for free. But I think if you're not discarding at random, you're probably doing better.
Let's think about this, though, right? So, are they. Because Faithless Looting is just straight discard two. Burning Inquiry is three cards at random.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume. Are they. Do you just get to a point where what you're discarding, you don't really care if it's random? Or
if you discard the hollow ones, then you defeat the point of discarding it.
Yeah, I suppose you can't ever do that because you draw first, don't you? It's not like Professor Oak, where you discard discard and then you draw, is it? It would seem to me that if you're trying to do this thing where it does require a bit of sculpting the graveyard, that I would be happy to sacrifice drawing one less card and discarding one less card to have control over what I'm discarding.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I want to build this deck, and the only things I'm lacking now are the hollow ones and Goblin Lore, and rather than spend 100 quid on four uncommons, I'm just going to keep this up.
God! Why is that 100? Oh, yeah. Like, when you said 28 for one, I was flabbergasted, but now when you think people are going to be like, oh, I'm going to buy. And I can't imagine that you're in the minority there thinking, just stick with Cathartic Reunion, this common that I can find in the bargain box anywhere because it's been, printed a lot, recently.
I mean, that's, be $100. Like, I've just got on eBay now. There is someone selling, there's not actually very many on eBay at the moment, to be fair. No one's selling any play sets, but they're 15 quid each.
Insane.
Which are commons from Portal or uncommons from 10th edition. Oh, there was also some in the starter set, but whatever.
Stupid.
Yeah. So I would use Cathartic Reunion for many reasons.
Yeah. The first one being you can buy a lot of the deck with the money you save on buying the Cathartic Reunions.
Well, like I said, the only things I need are Hollow Ones and Goblin Lore, and Hollow Ones are still only about $2. I like the foil ones are expensive because of this deck, but other than that, they're still, although they're being played, they're still a very abundant rare from a very recent set.
Yeah, it's that sort of card, isn't it, where people who are newish or only really into standard at the moment don't necessarily have a modern deck or don't have the interest in building Hollow One deck. When they've opened this at their drafts, they're going to just be like, and it's going to be in their trade binder, just sitting there. So it's not going to be hard for people to get hold of if they want four.
Yeah, exactly.
How are the stupid fast lands doing now? In terms of
lands or the Bloom and Marsh and stuff.
Like Blackcleave Cliffs, those ones, the fast lands. Are they stupid expensive still?
I don't think so, they would have gone down a bit. Whoa, okay. I did not know they did that. Well, I bought mine for $5. They're apparently 42 at the moment, or 48, sorry. Is that just because of Hollow Ones? It spiked at the same time, just after Rivals came out, when I think Hollow Ones started appearing.
Hmm.
They went from $20 to $46 overnight.
My God.
Okay. I'm kind of tempted to sell mine now, to be honest, and just wait for them to go back down.
Well, yeah. You might as well.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing is, I do want to play Hollow Ones, and I do want to play Fizzle Brand at some point, so I don't know.
Yeah. Are the pain lands too much?
It's probably, for something, probably not Crystal Brand, but for Hollow Ones, you just don't really care enough anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to the modern, you'll just be discarding stuff randomly, you're already just an absolute madman.
Yeah.
Which is why I want to play it, it's just so chaotic, it's so my style.
Yeah, yeah.
Just go to the opponent's a card, any card, I don't care.
Could this deck play, or would it need to play, something like Simeon Spirit Guide? Would it actually get anything out of that?
What, Hollow Ones?
Yeah. Does it need to do that? Just to power out stuff. Does it need to, or does it not, is that not really?
I probably would. I think if I made a list for it, which I can't remember if I have or not, I think I probably would substitute, like, I don't know, an angler and, I don't know, a street bait or something. Probably that's not a street bait, but something else. Because it runs lightning bolt. Yeah, I'd probably sacrifice like a lightning bolt with an angler for serious spirit guides, because, again, you've got that situation where, particularly if you're doing a random thing, where you can't plan your mana accordingly. Like, if you get to a situation where you've discarded two cards and you need to play, or you want to cast two hollow ones to be made one mana, that's where the spirit guide would be really useful.
Yes.
And also, you don't really care if you discard it, because you're just, oh, it's just something that's not hollow ones. But, yeah, I agree with that. I think I might try that.
I just like the idea of, if you're trying to do something a bit degenerate, then do it quickly.
Yeah. Life advice from Nick Vincent.
So that is all for now from us. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, give us some feedback on our Facebook page. Follow the group and keep up to date with whenever we are sending out podcasts. We can also be found on the MTG Cast network. That is mtgcast.com, as well as our own podcast website, which is glimmerofgenius.podbean.com. Also, if you're interested in even more Magic the Gathering content, then please check out my YouTube channel, Vincent Games, which you can find in the description below, or search up Vincent Games on YouTube. Once again, thanks very much for listening, and stay tuned for more.
See you later.
Take care.
Bye. See you later.
Cheers again. My beard used to go ginger, now it just goes grey.
Oh, that's, well, depending on your views, probably depressing.
Yeah. Oh, just one step closer to death.
Yeah.